We are holding on Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph by the first Mishnah. So we've been talking about in this perek about the dinim of what happens if a fire breaks out on Shabbos. So far we've been focusing mostly on what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. Obviously you can't put out the fire unless there's Pekuach Nefesh involved. But we've been talking about what you're allowed and not allowed to save in terms of svarim and in terms of food and clothing, etc. So now, Mishnah says, Nochri Shabola Chabos, if a guy comes to put out the fire, on his own, that is, Ein Omim like Kabe, you're not allowed to tell him, put it out. Now this is an example. Rashi says, if I'm Miral and Nochri Shvutz, where Minatoda, there'd be no problem. It's a guy doing the Malacha, so you're telling him to do it, what's the problem? But Midrabanan was saying that it's a miral nochri. You're telling a goy to do something which you yourself would not be allowed to do on Shabbos, and therefore the chum tell you you're not allowed to do that. So you're not allowed to tell him explicitly, go put out the fire. The al techabe, on the other hand, you also don't have to prevent him. You don't have to tell him, don't put it out. It's my Shabbos. Because his lack of rest on Shabbos is not you're not warned, you're not told in the Torah to avoid it. If he was your Eved, it would be one thing. We say, in the Aseres Hadibros, you have Ato Vincho Vitecha Abdecha Va'amoscha. So if it's your Eved Knani, your Shifra Knanis, you are responsible to make sure they don't work on Shabbos. But this guy is not your Eved or your Shifra. So if he wants to put out the fire on his own, then he can do that. You just can't tell him to do it. But if a child comes, a Jewish child that is, comes to put out a fire on Shabbos, you don't listen to him, meaning you don't allow him to do it. Because they, and we'll see in the Gemara, who are they, are responsible for making sure that he rests on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Ami, bidleika hitiru loy makol machaba eni mamsu. When it comes to a fire, specifically, the Chachamim allowed a person to announce, anybody who puts out this fire will not lose out. In other words, it's meant to imply, in other words, that I'll give you something for it, that I'll pay you for it after Shabbos, but without saying so in so many words. So when it comes to a fire, you're allowed to do that. So the Gemara says, name a Messiah, like, can we say that our Mishnah supports what he says? Because the Mishnah says, Nachri Shabola Chabe, that if a guy is coming to put out the fire, Ein Omim like Kabe Va'al Techabe, we say you're not allowed to tell him to put it out, and you don't have to tell him don't put it out, and because his rest on Shabbos is not your responsibility, implying, Kabe Hu Delei Aminim Lei, implying you can't tell him actually put it out. Ha kolam achabe ene mafsid aminamai seems to imply, though, that you could tell him kolam achabe ene mafsid, because otherwise the Mishnah should have said that not only you're not allowed to tell him kabe, you're not allowed to tell him actually put it out, but the Mishnah, if it were so, should have told us you're not even allowed to tell him kolam achabe ene mafsid. So the fact the Mishnah doesn't say that seems to imply that that's okay. However, the Gemara says not necessarily. Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the Mishnah, Al Techabe, because the Mishnah continues that you don't have to tell him, don't put it out, implying you don't tell him, don't put it out. Maybe the Mishnah also means, therefore, that you can't tell him, maybe the only thing you can do is just sit back and let him do it by himself. So you can't really prove anything one way or the other from the Mishnah. Obviously, one or the other part of the Mishnah was taught inexactly, and we're not meant to derive anything from it, and we don't know which part. With that said, Tosfos says, listen, we don't have anybody else arguing with Rav Ami. We're saying we can't specifically prove what he's saying from the Mishnah, but nevertheless, his din is still a din. In fact, Good morning, Ellie. In fact, the Yerushalmi mentions one time where Rav Ami himself actually did that. Where there was a situation where fire broke out in a certain town on Shabbos, and the Gemara says over there that Rav Ami did exactly that. He went, or he sent somebody to whatever a local street of Goyim and made an announcement. Good morning, Yaakov. And made an announcement called Machaba in Imafsid. Anybody who puts out. Good morning. We're holding on Kuf Chafala from an Aleph at the beginning of the Gemara. Or actually, by now, it's the middle of the Gemara, about the middle of the Amud we're holding. So we see that so Rav Ami himself did that. The Gemara, the Yerushalmi says that he actually one time when a fire broke out on Shabbos, he went or he sent somebody whatever to a street of goyim, made an announcement, kol machabe in a mafsid, and goyim came and put out the fire. So you're allowed to do that. You're just not allowed to tell it. So you're just not allowed to tell him explicitly put it out. Okay. And by the way, again, we're talking about over here that so Amidol and Nochri Shavuos, as Rashi had said, that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha for you on Shabbos. And Tosfos points out that this is true even when the Isser itself is only Dirabanan. When you get down to it, putting out a fire is only an Isser Dirabanan. Obviously, you have a malacha of Mechaba as one of the 39 malachas, and that's Daraisa. But like all the other malachas, it has to be done Legufay. And in this case, it's malacha she'ain etzricha legufa, according to any of the definitions that we've had in the Masechta of what that means. It's a malacha she'ain etzricha legufa because according to Tosfos, it's a malacha she'ain etzricha legufa because it's not being done for the same purpose as it was in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, they did the malacha of mechabe in order to get charcoal. Here, you're not doing that. According to Rashi, it was because you're doing it only because you're under duress. You would rather not have been in that situation. You'd rather that there hadn't been a fire in the first place that you should have to put out. And according to the other Rishonim, somewhat similar to Rashi, the point is you're not doing it because you're trying to accomplish something constructive. You're doing it because you want to remove a hezek or something. Whatever the case, putting out a fire obviously is in that category. So midaraisa would be mutter. It's only dirabanan. So Tosfos points out, when we say over here that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha for you, that includes a malacha dirabanan. Now, with that said, it does say in Shulchan Aruch that you have poskim who say you do have rishonim who say that when you have a hefsid, that when you have a major hefsid, you are actually allowed to tell a goy to do something for you on Shabbos. However, in this case, with a fire, again, as we've been saying throughout the perek, we don't want you to be doing that. The chachamim don't want you to be doing that because a fire is something that people panic about much more than other kinds of disasters or dangers. And therefore, there's a real possibility that if you do that, you may end up actually putting out the fire yourself. So therefore, we're going to still impose this rule that we don't tell the goy to. Again, obviously, as long as there's not pikuach nefesh involved. If there's pikuach nefesh involved, then you call the fire department and so forth. Okay. We're holding in the middle of Kufchaf Aleph from an Aleph. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Ma'aseh v'nofel dleikah b'chatseder shel Yosef ben Simai b'shichin. It happened once that a fire broke out in the courtyard of Yosef ben Simai in Shichin. Shichin is a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael. Ubo anshe gistera shel tzipori l'chabos. The people, the goyim of the gistera, which is Rashi translates it as shilta, it means the governing body. So in other words, we don't know when this Yosef and Simai lived. It might be that they, whatever it is, these people were goyim, as we're going to see from the story, but it might have been in the times when the Romans are ruling over Eretz Yisrael, and it was a Roman garrison. It might have been the Greeks. It might have been whoever it was. The local goyisha, the people from the local goyisha government agency came to put it out. Because this Yosef ben Simai is in charge of the king's possessions. So the king had possessions in that area in Shechin, and Yosef ben Simai was in charge of them. So therefore these goyim were coming in to put out the fire. The Lohi Nichon, he didn't allow them to put it out, mipnei kvod haShabbos, because of the honor of Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? Let's finish the story, and we'll talk about what he was thinking. V'nasal nes v'yodug shomim v'kibul. A nes happened, and rain fell, and it put out the fire. Well, la'erev, that evening, he wanted to show these goyish soldiers, or whatever, these goyish government workers, that he's thankful for them coming, so they should know to do so, to be willing to come in the future. Shigur l'chol echad man shtei sloyim. He sent each one of the workers two sloyim. V'la'afalkos shebehen chamishim. And their leader, their captain or whatever, he sent 50 sloyim. 50 to the captain and two each for the common soldiers. Okay, I don't know. I guess that was the pay scale in those days. I don't know. Okay. Uchshamu chachamim bedaber. When the chachamim heard what happened, Amru, they said, Loi hayatzarech hakach. Very nice. Hashem did a nest for you, but you should know you didn't need to do that. Sharei shaninu, because we learn in our Mishnah, Nachri shabal chabei, said if a guy is coming to put out the fire, ein omim like chabei v'al dechabei. You're not allowed to tell him put it out, but you don't have to tell him don't put it out. He's a guy. You're not mitzvah al shvisasei. So therefore, so you didn't have to tell them don't put it out. Now, what was he thinking? So first of all, the Yerushalmi has an expression actually. Now, the Yerushalmi tells the story also and says that he said, Yavei gabei v'yigbe choyvei. Let the collector come and collect his debt. In other words, he's saying, in effect, he's saying, yeah. In other words, obviously, I owe Hashem something, and therefore Hashem is causing this fire to break out, and okay, so let it burn. Obviously, Hashem has his reasons for it. But different Mephoshim over here talk about, the Marsha talks about that Yosef was not an Amoret. He knew the halacha is that the goy is allowed to put out the fire, but he was concerned that people are going to think that he actually told them to come. Given that, it wasn't like nowadays, where whenever a fire breaks out, you have the fire department comes for anybody. It was, as we see in the story over here, they're only coming because he works for the king. So therefore, he was concerned, not so much that there's chilul Shabbos, that's why the expression is, he was concerned with the kvoda Shabbos. He felt it wouldn't be an honor for Shabbos that people are going to think that he maybe called them on his own. Different other Mephoshim talk about, the Rashba talks about that later on. We're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, about various cases where a goy does something. When is a Jew allowed to benefit from it and when not? And you have cases where even though the goy did it on his own, you're still not allowed to. So Yosef thought that this might be one of those cases as well. And the Chachamim clarified for him that no, when it comes to a fire, it's different. I saw a cute quote on it, that at the end of Parashas Bahar, you have the last passage of Parashas Bahar, says, you should keep my Shabbosis. And then two psukim later, near the beginning of Bechukosai, you have the bracha, if you keep my mitzvahs, I'll give you rain in its time. So it's a remnant to the story over here, where he kept Shabbos in the best possible way, and Hashem rewarded him by making it rain and putting out the fire. Okay. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Avo Kotten Shabol HaChabos, but we said, if a little Jewish kid comes to put out the fire, Ein Shemin Lo, we say, we don't listen to him, we don't allow him to do it, because they are responsible for making sure that he rests on Shabbos. So who are the they? Shamat Minah, should we be able to learn from that? Cotton oichel nevelos based in mitzvah and olive lafrisha, that if a child is eating nevelos or doing other things that are also, that based in is responsible to prevent him from doing that. Now, the problem with that is, Rashi refers to a story in the Gemara in Yevamos, where the Gemara tells the story over there. Rabbi Baba Chana one time lost the keys of the Bes Medrash in Rosh Hashanah, and now it's Shabbos, and what are we going to do? How are we going to open up the Bes Medrash? So Rabbi Yochanan tells him, go get some little kids and have them play over there in the street. It wasn't like, nowadays kids play in the street. You yell at them to get out of the street. There was the other way around. You want them to play in the street. There were no cars, of course. So anyway, this way, if they're little kids, if they find the keys, they're going to go and pick them up and carry them and then bring them to you. And look what we found in Rosh Hashanah. They don't know that the keys were lost over there. The point is, now, that would only work if we say that the local Beis Din is not responsible. If a kid does a malacha on Shabbos, the local Beis Din is not responsible to prevent him. Because if we say they are, then obviously you can't put them in that situation. If you see them picking up the keys on Shabbos, you're going to have to tell them, Shabbos, you can't do that. So how does that work with our Mishnah, where it uses the expression shvisosei aleihem, that the responsibility for this kid's Shabbos is on them, seems to imply on Beis Din. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'katna oisel das aviv. So Rabbi Yochanan says, because here we're talking about the child is old enough to know that he's doing it for his father's sake. So therefore, he's doing it for his father. So therefore, the father himself has a responsibility to make sure that his son doesn't do the aveira. Okay, the Gemara says so. Dekavasa gami nachri dekaavad ledaiti d'Israel. Okay, well, we're mentioning in the Mishnah the case of a goy putting out the fire versus a child putting out the fire. We're saying the goy, you're allowed to leave him to do it, but the child you're not. If you're saying that the case of the child is where he's doing it al das aviv, then the goy would also have to be that he's doing it al das of the Jew. Well, ledaiti d'Israel mishari, would that be allowed? We said that if the guy is doing it on behalf of the Yid, like, for example, the Yid told him to do it, then it would be osir. So why, so how could it be that with the kid, we're talking about he's just doing it al das, his father? The answer is noch with the daita de nafshe of it, because the guy is doing it basically on his own behalf. Yes, he knows that the Jew is gonna benefit from it, that the fire is out, but he's doing it mainly for his own hana, that he knows, because as the Yid announced over there, call him machaba ein mafsid, anybody who puts out the fire is not gonna lose out. Or even if the Yid didn't announce that, the guy knows that after Shabbos, he's gonna be able to go to the Yid and ask him for something to compensate him for his time and trouble. So therefore he's doing it on his own, not primarily for the benefit of the Yid, as opposed to when the child is doing it, he's doing it primarily for his father's benefit, and therefore it would be awesome. So the difference is, in other words, that they're not doing it for their father. Oh, so you have like this. Tosfos mentions over here, we said before that putting out a fire on Shabbos is not necessarily an Isur Daraisa, because usually you're not doing it for the purpose they did it in the Mishkan. The purpose in the Mishkan was to have charcoal. You're not doing it for that purpose. However, it might be we're talking over here according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that nevertheless you chayev for it. Malach Hashem Tzucha L'Gufa. Throughout the Masechta, we've had Rabbi Yehuda says you chayev. Because Tosfos learns it's only by an Isur Darabanan. Because only by an Issa Daraisa, rather, where even there's a Hava Amina, that Beis Din would have a Chiyuv to be Mafreshim. In that case, with the keys, it was also an Issa Daraisa, fine. But Tosfos says that, so like this. The Rambam learns that ultimately the halacha is not that based in the Tzuvan Lafrisha. The only one who's Mechoyev to is his own father. So okay, in the case of the keys over there, their own father, the father of these kids, wasn't involved. So therefore, anybody else doesn't have to prevent them from doing an issue. Here we're talking about that the kid's father is there in the house and the kid is doing it al-Das's father. The other Tosfos over here mentions another possibility that there may be a difference in the age of the child. Is the child old enough for Chinuch or not? So our Mishnah, so the case of the keys over there, we'd be talking about the children who are not of the age of chinuch. The case over here we're talking about would be where the child is old enough to be is old enough for chinuch, and therefore we're saying that then in fact we would say that Beis Din does have a responsibility to prevent him. So both opinions are broad in Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber brings the Rambam's opinion. The Ramah brings Tosfos's opinion. Okay. So the Maskana was saying not necessarily. We're saying that it depends. So it depends according to who you go. And first of all, it does go according to age. But second of all, again, in Shulchan Aruch, you have a short simon on this in Hilchos Shabbos, simon Shin Mem Gimel. And yeah, you have if the child doesn't have a father, or if his father's not taking care of him or whatever, maybe not necessarily does Beis Din have it. I mean, obviously, you know, somebody should be mechanechim. You don't want him to grow up completely wild. But as far as the actual din, are they required to apply halacha? Not necessarily, especially according to the Rambam, that ultimately only the father has that chiyuv. There's also an explanation that we're showing him talk about over here. There might be a difference between preventing the child from doing something versus from not doing, over here we're talking about the original case was cutting oichel nevelas, where he's actually eating nevela, or over here where he's putting out a fire on Shabbos. There might be a difference between that versus being mechanechim to do mitzvah saseh. Maybe there's more of an obligation to be mechanechim to do mitzvah saseh rather than to avoid mitzvah lo saseh. Okay. Mishnah says, you're allowed to overturn a bowl over a lamp to prevent the flame from catching on to a roof beam. So here, all this time in the parable, you're talking about if the fire did break out, here you're trying to prevent the fire from breaking out. So you have, let's say, the roof is very low, or the candle, or the lamp, whatever, is very high up. So we learned about this before. So you're allowed to take a bowl and overturn it over the candle to prevent it from catching fire. Rashi mentions over here, and in all the other places, there's three places in this Masechta where this din is mentioned. And in each place, Rashi mentions that it's a bowl shocheres of earthenware. And we talked about it before. The reason is because if it was a bowl, the Mishnah Berurah talks about, because if it was a bowl made out of metal, then you would have a problem doing that, because then you're heating up the metal, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, because then you're softening it and making it more. You're making it that you can reshape it or strengthening it, as the case may be, or whatever, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. It doesn't matter, but he shouldn't do it. I mean, fine, it's malacha shen tzuch legufa. If he does it, he's not going to be chayav, but nevertheless, he shouldn't be doing it. So he uses a bowl of cheres. Obviously, again, he's not putting it on tightly. He doesn't want to choke off the flame. He's doing it just enough to keep it from catching on, but leaving air space around it. Rashi also points out, we learned in the third parak, we had a sugya on the dinim of muktzah. Most of the dinim of muktzah we're going to deal with in the next couple of parakim, but we had a sugya on it earlier, on Dafnam Gimel and Dalad, and we mentioned over there an opinion of Rav Yitzchak, who said that when you have something which is itself muktzah, then you're only allowed to move a keli, then you're not allowed to move a keli l'tzorech of that. We had a case over there, for example, where an egg was laid on Shabbos, so you're allowed to take a bowl and use it to cover the egg. So according to that opinion, according to Rav Yitzchak, how are you taking a bowl over here and using it to cover a lamp, which is mukta? And the answer is, the Gemara had said over there that according to him, you would have to be talking about, you already picked up the bowl for some other purpose, and now while you have it in your hand, you're using it in order to put on the flame, you're using it to put over the flame. But not according to Rav Yitzchak, you wouldn't be allowed to begin with to pick up the bowl and use it and then bring it over to cover it. That's the point. In other words, according to Rav Yitzchak, you can do that. You're using the bowl you picked up the bowl for some other purpose. For example, it doesn't even have to be that you wanted to eat in it. It could be that, but it doesn't even have to be. It could be b'tzorech l'mekoymai. The bowl was on the table, and you wanted the table for something else. And now, once you're picking up the bowl, then you're allowed to put it over the flame. According to that, I mean, halacha is not like Rav Yitzchak anyway. So according to that, alpi halacha, you are allowed to pick up a keli even for the sake of something else that is not muktzah. So according to that, you would be able to do it even directly, even without that you picked it up for some other purpose. You're not touching the muktzah item, so therefore, yeah. Val soya shokot, and also you're allowed to use a bowl to cover up soya of a child that's on the ground. We'll see in the Gemara exactly what the case is. Val akrav shloi tishach, and also on a scorpion, so it shouldn't bite you. Well, so you're not necessarily no. So killing it, actually, we're going to talk about on Omer Beis. Right now, we're talking about seder. Right now, we're talking about you trapping it. You're trapping it, but nevertheless, again, you're allowed to in order that it shouldn't bite. But now we're going to see in the Gemara, it's not so simple. We're going to see in the Gemara there's different opinions on that subject. So wait. Well, yeah, I mean, even a large scorpion, if you use a large enough bowl, then you're trapping it no matter what. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, however, Rabbi Yehuda says no. Ma'ase bol lifnei Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai ba'arav. It happened once that such a case came before Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai in Arav. Arav is the name of a city in the Galil. There was a case like that where somebody did that. He put a bull over a scorpion on Shabbos. But Omar and Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai said, Choshani lemechatas, I'm concerned this person may actually be chayav achatas, because Rashi says the scorpion wasn't chasing the person. It was Sam there in the room. So therefore, so Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai is saying, I don't know, therefore, is he chayav because of tzeda or not, as we're going to see on Amud Beis. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not so simple to say that you're allowed to do it. Okay, so then we'll see in the Gemara. But in any case, I mean, it goes back to this matter of malacha shetzricha legufa or not. When you're trapping the scorpion, it's not malacha shetzricha legufa because you're not trapping it to use the scorpion like they did, like they trapped animals to use them in the Mishkan. Or you're not doing it because you want to. You're doing it because you would rather not have been in that situation, according to Rashi, or because you're doing it to remove a hezek, according to the other Rishonim. So. But Rabbi Yehuda holds Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa as Chayev, so that's why he's bringing from this example of Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai that we see that maybe the person is in fact Chayev Chatas for it. The Yerushalmi, by the way, mentions Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai lived in this place called Arav for, I think, 18 years or 22 years, I don't remember. And all that time, they only ever asked him two Shailos in Halacha. One was this one, and another one we're going to have in the 22nd Perek, where they asked him a question. So Rabbi Yechanan, what? So all that he was living in this city of Arab in the Galil. Well, so actually the Yerushalmi mentions Rabbi Yechanan and Zakkai was very disappointed with them. Hayitachan that you have that in 18 or 22, I forget which one it was. I think it was 18. In 18 years, you're asking only two shilas. So he said to them, people of Galil, you're going to end up being, or you're going to end up being in a situation of Mesikin or Simoikin. There's like two or three different explanations among Rishonim what that means. The word Simoikin, you know, the Melachas Shlomo on the Mishnah says it has the gifts of Simoikin, which means red, means like your earth of the Galil is going to be red with blood because Goyim are going to invade and conquer the place. the other gear, the gears that we have in front of us in the Yerushalmi is Mesikin, which in that case, the different Mefoshim on the Yerushalmi say Mesikin either means olive pickers, so like you guys are going to stay Amoratim, and all you do is know how to pick olives, you're never going to become Bnei Torah, or Mesikin can also mean people who rob you and harass you and whatever, so he's saying that that's going to end up. Yeah. Anyway. So the Gemara tells Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Bar Abba, Rabbi Chanan, Bar Rava, Iklul Lebei Oven Demin Nashikya. So these three Amiroim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Bar Abba, and Rabbi Chanan, Bar Rava, all of them visited the house of Oven from Nashikya, is the name of a place. So, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Bar Abba, Aisu Lehu Puyasa, they brought beds to sit on for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, because this oven, the Balabas, considered them important. Rav Chanan bar Rava loy Aisule, they didn't bring a bed for Rav Chanan bar Rava, instead they just had him sit on the ground. Because apparently they didn't consider him to be of the caliber of the other ones to bother bringing out a bed for him. Well, Ashkeche Masni loy Lebrei. Now, Rav Chanan bar Rava found, he was wandering around the house, he found this oven sitting and teaching his son our Mishnah. And he was teaching, when the Mishnah says, Val Tsoya Shol Katan, he says, Mipnei Katan. It means what it's talking about is the Tsoya of a child on the floor, and you're allowed to cover it up with a bowl to prevent the child playing in it and getting dirty. Remember, they didn't have diapers in those days, so if the child is going to go to the bathroom, it might well be on the floor. So therefore, you're allowed now to take a bowl and use that to cover it up so the kid doesn't play in it the rest of Shabbos. Amale, so Rav Chanan bar Rava, who already was a little bit upset with Ovin for not even giving him a bed, whatever, a seat to sit on and making him sit on the floor. So he uses a sharp expression, Ovin shatya masni shtusa libre. Foolish Oven is teaching foolishness to his son. He's not understanding the Mishnah correctly. What do you mean that you should have to, so we're saying you take a bowl and use it to cover it, implying that Tsoya itself is Muktzah, but, so you're not allowed to actually move it off the ground, but why is it Muktzah? It's usable, it can be eaten by dogs. So, therefore, you should be able to move it itself. So, instead of covering with a bowl, you should be able to pick it up, and you should be able to pick it up and take it outside. Now, you're going to say, okay, you know what? Maybe it's considered noilad. Maybe you're not allowed. After all, it didn't exist yesterday. So maybe, therefore, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos because it would be Mukta. Can't be. V'ha Tanya. But we learn in a brisa, Nahoresh Hamoshkin Umayones Hanovin, rivers that are flowing, or well springs that are flowing, where new water is coming out of them, Harein Kiragle Kol Adam. Now they are like anybody's feet. Meaning like this. Mostly this is relevant as far as the halachas of Yom Tov, because on Shabbos you're not allowed to carry anyway. But it's more relevant to Yom Tov, and therefore it's talked about extensively in the Gemara and Beitza, but we're also gonna have something about an Erevin though, that you have like this. Normally, so we know a person has a Tum Shabbos. You can't walk outside 2,000 Amos, outside the city. A person's things that belong to him also have a Tum Shabbos. Now you have, let's say, for example, something that you owned before Shabbos and was in your house, let's say. It has the same Tum as you. You're not allowed, for example, you wouldn't be allowed to lend it to somebody on Yom Tov who's going to take it outside to their Tum because it was in your, it has to remain within your Tum on Yom Tov or on Shabbos if there's an Eruv, let's say, and then if somehow you can have a situation, let's say an Eruv was made or whatever, and you have a situation where you're able to carry on Shabbos, whatever. The point is that it can't go beyond your own Tum. However, the Braisa is saying if you have a river or a spring, the water is constantly flowing, therefore the water was not Kona Shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos. You can't say the water was in any particular place where Shabbos began. Therefore, so even though that water may have flowed from outside the Tum throughout Yom Tov, you're allowed to draw water from there and carry it anywhere in your own Tum on Yom Tov. So we see from that That, now, the point is, so this, okay, the focus over there in that Braisa is that there's no problem of Tumen. Well, I mean, not no problem, but the Tumen of it is the same as the Tumen of you. But the point is, we don't say that that water is considered like it wasn't there before Yom Tov because it flowed from outside the city or wherever, and you shouldn't, the Chlal, be able to draw it on Yom Tov because it would be considered Nolad. So we see that Nolad doesn't apply in such cases. In the first perek, we had a machloikas b'shama b'shilol on the matter of shvisas kelim. Are you obligated to make sure your kelim rest on Shabbos? The halacha is like b'shilol that you're not, which is how we're able to leave on lights on Shabbos and keep pots of food on the stove on Shabbos and so forth. I mean, you have, in the case of pots of food, of course, you know, you have all the dinim of shehiya and atmana that we learned earlier in the sechta. But in principle, yes, you're allowed to. But here we're talking about something different. We're saying that it's not a matter of shvisas kalim, it's a matter of your kalim or your possessions or whatever have a tum as well, and they're not allowed to be taken outside of that tum. So by the same token, the tsoya over here, yes, it didn't exist before Shabbos, but so what? That water wasn't in the river before Shabbos because it only flowed in on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, and we still say you're allowed to draw it. So by the same token, you should be allowed to move that tsoya. So what's the problem? So Oven, why are you teaching that the case is we're talking about tsoya of a child? Which is edible by dogs, and you're implying that it's muktzah, and the only thing you can do with it is cover it. Instead, it shouldn't be muktzah because you're able to feed it to dogs, and it's not muktzah to do that. So Oven tells him the Ela Hechi Astiye. Okay, so how should I learn the Mishnah? The fact is, the Mishnah says Valtsoya b'shvil kot, Valtsoya mifnei kotan. So what does it mean? So he explains to him, Ema Altsoya shel tanegolim mipnei kotan. What you have to do is you have to relearn it. The word is, the vote is, and you're allowed to use the bowl to cover the tsoya of chickens that's on the ground because a cotton may play with it. The point is, in other words, the tsoya of chickens is not something that is not something that is edible by is not something that is edible by dogs. So therefore, it is muktzah. So the only thing you can do with it is cover it. The problem with that is the typical to have a graf shori. The problem with that is that you would have another reason. If we're talking about that it's in the house, let's say, then it should be considered a graf shori. It's like a chamber pot, which is disgusting. And the halacha is you're allowed to take that out and throw it out in the trash. So the same thing over here. If you have chicken soya on the ground, it's disgusting. You don't want it in your house. Again, you should be allowed to. Davening and learning actually depends. And in Shulchan Aruch it says there's certain kinds of chickens, red hens, which might mean turkeys actually, where their soya is particularly smelly, and you're not allowed to. Otherwise, the general rule with soya animals is more with most animals, if it smells bad, then you're not allowed to. But otherwise, if it doesn't, then you are. But okay. Anyway, the point is it's a graf shori, it's like a chamber pot, which you're allowed to take out and then spill out on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So the same thing over here, you should be able to take it out. The chitema graf shori agav mona ein ihu gufei loy. So you might answer, the difference is a graf shori, maybe the chachamim are only allowing you to take the tzoya together with the keli. Meaning, in other words, we would say, look, the keli itself is mutter to handle. Or fine, even if you're going to say it was a bosses ladavra also before Shabbos, still maybe fine. The chachamim are maybe going to be makel on that in order to get out the disgusting thing from your house. It was a keli that was made for it, and not only made for it, but it was actually in there before Shabbos. So let's say there was tzoya in it before Shabbos, and now comes Shabbos, it's still in there. So then you're going to say that, so usually we would say such a thing would be muktzah, fine, we would say maybe the chachamim are after it on the grounds that it's graf shori. So you're going to say, therefore, but you're going to say that only if it's in a keli. So then you can say at least, you know, fundamentally the keli itself is not muktzah, even if it was maybe a bosses, whatever, also it's still going to be makel, but not to say when you have the tzoya by itself on the ground, which is what we're talking about over here, can't be. There was a case of a mouse, the Ishikach be Ispamaki de Ravashi, which was found among the Besamim of Ravashi on Shabbos. And Ravashi says, pick it up by the tail and take it out. It doesn't say whether it was alive or dead, but either way, it's mukta. The point is, the point is, you're allowed to handle it by itself without a keli. So by the same token over here, if we're talking of soya of tanagolim, of chickens, then why should you... What's that? Okay. You might. It would be good if you can put yourself on mute, actually, unless you have a question. Okay. So yeah. So we see that you're allowed to move the graf shor'i by itself. We see you're allowed to move the disgusting thing by itself, the mouse, for example. So in this case, also the tzoya. So why are we saying, again, if it's tzoya of tanagolim, why would you have to put a keli over it instead of taking it out itself? The answer is, va'ashpa. The answer is, because we're not talking about it's in the house, we're talking about that the tzoya is in the garbage heap. Well, the question is, in that case, for cotton ba'ashma my boile, what is a child doing in the garbage heap? Usually, the garbage heap would be in Rosh Hashanah Abim. You're not going to let a kid play unsupervised in Rosh Hashanah Abim. So what's he doing there in the first place that you should have to cover it up? The answer is b'chotzer. Okay, we're talking about a garbage heap, which is not in the Rosh Hashanah Abim, which is in the chotzer. Still, the question is, chotzer nami graf shor ihu. Okay, but still, a chotzer, it's in your chotzer, it's in the place that you use regularly, for your purposes on Shabbos, so it should have the same din of graf shor'i, and therefore it should be mutter to take it out, to get it out of your chotzer. You'd put it out in the mavo or something. The answer is ba'ashva shebachotzer. So the answer is we're talking about that it's the garbage. So first, the Gemara had assumed, the gear says we have it in front of us, is that the Gemara had taken back what it said ba'ashva and said just b'chotzer. It's not on the ground in the house, it's on the ground in the chotzer. And the problem is that then if it's in the chotzer, then still it should be considered a graf shor'i, because people regularly use their chotzer on Shabbos to take a walk or whatever. And the answer is ba'ashba shebachotzer. The answer is because it's in a garbage heap that's in the chotzer. So the kids still may play there. Therefore, you have to cover it up. But on the other hand, it's not a graf shor'i because not bothering the adults. Because the fact is, it's a garbage heap anyway. It's the area, anyway, smells and whatever, and you're not using it. But the kids still may wander over there and play with it, and therefore you're allowed to cover it up with a bowl on Shabbos. Now, this is all according to the Girsa as we have it in the Gemara over here. And this is Rashi's Girsa. A number of Rishonim have a problem with this explanation, with this Girsa, and this explanation, one of them being, why are we bringing a question from the case of the rivers that flow on Shabbos? After all, the water existed before Shabbos, it just wasn't within your tum. And Bechlal, we know that Nolad is it. The question was, to begin with, that if it was human soya, why should there be a problem? We said it shouldn't it be like the water in the rivers, but first, because it's edible by dogs. But so what? We have lots of cases of Nolad that are Osir and Muktzah on Shabbos and Yom Tov. At the beginning of Masechta Beitza, Beitza should know to be Yom Tov. It was also something where you knew before Shabbos it was going to get laid, and it's still Muktzah. So the same thing over here. Okay, you know that a kid is going to go to the bathroom over Shabbos, but so what? Why shouldn't it be Nolad? So therefore, they prefer a different Girsa, which the Rif and a number of other Rishonim have, which is that we don't even have the first question in the Gemara about that if it was human waste, then it should be edible by dogs. We right away go to the question that it should be a graf shor'i. We skip out the whole part that it was roi leklovim and that it should be mutter like the rivers. We skip that whole thing. We say that, no, never mind that, fine. It might taka be mutter on the grounds of Nolad. However, it should be considered a graf shor'i. And then we go through the discussion and say, okay, but maybe a graf shor'i is only mutter if it's with a keli, not if it's by itself. And we bring the proof from the mouse in the case of Rav Ashi that not. And then we end up saying that, yes, it is talking about in a garbage heap, but the end thing is, we say not ba'ashba shebachotzer, but b'chotzer acheres. We end up saying, we are talking about chicken waste, but we're talking about, it's not in your own chotzer, it's in a different chotzer that you set aside for the chickens. So therefore, the vote is, again, you yourself, it doesn't bother, because it's a chotzer that's reserved for the chicken, and therefore you yourself, it doesn't bother, and therefore it can't be considered a graf shor'i. The kid may go in there and play with it. Therefore, you need to put the bowl down in order to prevent them from playing with it. So it comes... No, you still have that part of the story. You still have that oven thought it meant a child's waste that's on the ground, and he tells him that no, the problem it means that it's not the point is not that he starts out by saying that's mochenes laklovim, that it's not mukta. He starts out according to this gusa saying it should be a graf shor'i and it should be mutter to remove it. And the end answer is we're talking about it's a different chotzer, which means in other words that in the end it means the gemara, we don't have to say therefore that Davka that it means from chickens. It could actually be the child's own soya or somebody else's soya, but it's in a different chutzer, and therefore it's not a graf shori'i, and you don't have a heter to move it. The point is, according to that girsa, which is accepted la'alocha in Shulchan Aruch, soya itself is considered mukta. We don't say that it's mukhan l'klavim. We don't say that since it's edible by dogs, then therefore it's not mukta, because again, you have the problem of noilad. So therefore, if it's in your own house or in your own chotzer or what have you, then you have a heter to move it on the grounds of graf shori'i, but otherwise not. Otherwise, the only thing you can do is cover it up with a bowl or something. So the Gemara doesn't tell that part, so maybe he realized, maybe not. I don't know. Okay. The Mishnah had continued, while Akrav Shalei Tishach, that you're allowed to put a bowl over a scorpion to prevent it from biting. So let's talk about the details of that. Amar Rabbi Shurban Levi, Kolam Azikin Nehrogin Meshavas. Rabbi Shurban Levi says, any kind of creature that is mazik, and mazik doesn't just mean that it bites and makes you uncomfortable, it means that can actually kill a person, then you're allowed to kill it on Shabbos. Tosfos points out, in the Mishnah we were talking about only capturing the akrav by putting it under a bowl. Here we're talking about actual killing. The point is that Tosfos says the chiddush of that is trapping, both of them are malachas daraisa, but trapping is less obvious to people that you trapped it, if people notice it less than killing it. So you would think that maybe killing you have less latitude to do, and therefore the Gemara is saying that not. Therefore, Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying that not, that the same way as you're allowed to trap it, you're allowed to kill it. And in the Mishkan, they killed animals for their skins, exactly. So if you're killing the animal because you want to make some use of it, then that would be malacha like the kind they did in the Mishkan. But here it's not like that. Right? So Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying, any mazik, any animal, that's any deadly animal, you're allowed to kill on Shabbos. Meaning, again, because it would be like Rabbi Shimon, malacha shenetzuch legufa. Masiv Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, chamisha neherogin b'Shabbos, there are only five creatures that you're allowed to kill on Shabbos. The Elohim, the Zvuv Sheb Eretz Mitzrayim, the flies that are in Mitzrayim, the Tzira Sheb Ninveh, the hornets, wasps that are in Ninveh, the Akro Sheb Chadiev, the scorpions, not just any scorpions, specifically the scorpions that are in Chadiev, which is northern Iraq, the Nachash Sheb Eretz Yisrael, the snakes in Eretz Yisrael, the Kelav Shoita B'chol Makom, and a mad dog, a rabid dog, anywhere you're allowed to kill. So we have to ask. We have to ask Mani. Now we have to ask, which Tana would this be according to? Ilema Rabbi Yehuda. If it were according to Rabbi Yehuda, how could that be? If Mela, if we're talking about if they're chasing after a person, then fine, Pikuach Nefesh. But if they're not chasing after a person, how could the Braisa be saying that there are any animals that you're allowed to kill on Shabbos? If it was according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ha'amah Malacha Shenetzuch Legufa Chayav Aleil. Doesn't he say that a Malacha Shenetzuch Legufa you're chayav for? And this is a Malacha Shenetzuch Legufa. So there should be no difference between these five and any other creatures if they're not chasing after you. El Alav Rav Shimon. Obviously, therefore, the Mishnah must, the Braisa rather, must be like Rav Shimon. And therefore, the Braisa is saying only these five are your mutter, because these are particularly dangerous creatures, as opposed to other ones not. Whereas Rav Shurban Levi said that any dangerous creature you're allowed to kill on Shabbos. So how does that work? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it certainly wouldn't work. And even according to Rabbi Shimon, the Braisa seems to be saying only these five. Right. Not should be everything according to Rabbi. According to Rabbi Shurban Levi, it's everything. But who does that go according to? It can't be according to Rabbi Yehuda. It can't be according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shurban Levi is an Amora. He can't be arguing with Tanoim. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, so Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Uman Neimalon Dehomet Tarastahi, who says that this Braisa that we're quoting is correct, Dilma Meshabeshtahi, maybe this Braisa has a mistake in it. Now, we have a general rule that any Braisa that the Gemara mentions in some places, that any Braisa that was not taught in the yeshiva of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia is not necessarily guaranteed to be correct. Because various people who compose Braisas, sometimes they'd compose that the lashon wouldn't be exact, or they'd make a mistake, they'd mix up details or whatever. So not necessarily is this such a reliable braisa that we can be asking on Rabbi Shurban Levi from it. Amar Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef says no. I'm the one who taught this braisa, but I'm the one who pointed out the question on Rabbi Shurban Levi. I will also give the answer. That you shouldn't think that the answer is the Braisa is no good. I can vouch for this Braisa, but I have a way of explaining it. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is talking about where any of these creatures are chasing after a person. So then, even if it's not one of the five, it's still the Kuach Nefesh, because they're still dangerous creatures, and therefore you're allowed to kill it. Where's the Braisa talking? So that's the thing. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had said any creature that's dangerous. So now we're saying, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would be talking about where the creature is chasing after him, and the Braisa would be talking about where it's not. Now, that's according to Rashi. Tosfos does not like that and does not like that explanation for a couple of reasons. One of them, one problem is that when Rabbi Yosef uses the expression "va'anoma taritzdalei," I will solve it. Usually, that means I will show how the Braisa is correct, not that I'm going to answer Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi. And from that, we're going to get that it sounds like he's trying to explain the Braisa itself is talking about a different case than you thought about. So therefore, Tosfos says what it means is the other way around. It means the Braisa is talking about when they're chasing after him, and even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the five, even though Rabbi Yehuda holds Malacha, She'enet Tzricha, L'Gufo Yochayev, but he would agree with the five because they're particularly dangerous. Therefore, if it's one of those five and they're chasing after you, then you would be allowed to kill them. But if it's any other ones, even if they're chasing after you, Rabbi Yehuda would still say that's Aser. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi would be holding like Rabbi Shimon, which Malach Hashem is Tzuchel Gofer is Potter. Now again, as we talked about before, the Rambam holds that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to Malach Hashem is Tzuchel Gofer. So according to the Rambam, if we took Tosfos' explanation of the Gemara, it would mean that according to the Rambam, it would mean that you would not be allowed to kill, that you would have a heter to kill only if it's one of the five and they're chasing after you. Whereas otherwise not. Whereas all the other Rishonim say that the halacha is like Reb Shimon, and therefore, based on what Tosfos is saying over here, it would come out that so far, Rabbi Shimon Levi is saying that you would be allowed to kill any of them because they're dangerous, but we're not finished the sugya yet, so let's continue the sugya, and we'll see what actually happens halacha. Okay. Tani Tana Kamei the Rava Baravona, Hahurig Nechoshim Ba'akravim B'Shabbos, Ein Rechachos Chassidim, Neuchahemen. They say, Torah Braisa that says that if a person kills snakes or scorpions on Shabbos, Ein Rechassidim, Neuchahemen, the Chassidim are not happy with such a person. He doesn't consider, the Chassidim will not consider such a person to have done the right thing. Amalei, so Rava Baravona says, you should know, V'oysen Chassidim, Ein Rechachamim, Neuchahemen. You should know, on the other hand, those chassidim who would criticize such a thing, the chachamim are not happy with them. The chachamim would say, don't be more frum than you need to be. There's a heter to kill nechoshim and akrabim on Shabbos if necessary. Okay, the Gemara says, a pliga de Rav Huna. Now, on the other hand, that disagrees with what Rav Huna says. De Rav Huna chazilahu gavra de kakotel zibura. Rav Huna, one time saw somebody killing a bee on Shabbos, and the pastures, it was one of these kinds of bees or wasps or whatever that we said before, which is particularly dangerous. It's one of the five. Amalei, and he said, same Shlim Tinu Lekulu, what do you think? You've killed all of them. There's a lot more where that one came from. In other words, you didn't really accomplish anything by killing that one. So we see that Rav Huna is saying, in other words, that you're not allowed to kill them on Shabbos. So Rava Bar Rav Huna is disagreeing with his father. His father says you're not allowed to kill them unless maybe they're chasing after you, and Rava Bar Rav Huna is saying you are. And that's why he's saying the chassidim, if chassidim tell a person you shouldn't have done that, then the chachamim will tell those chassidim that you don't think you're so chassidish. No, it wasn't necessarily in the Mismedrash. The point is he saw the person killing it on Shabbos. But in other words, the point is he's saying, Mela, if this one was chasing after you and it could be putting your life in danger is one thing, but it wasn't. So what do you think you're accomplishing by killing the one? Do you think that you've completely removed the danger from everybody else? Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Nizdamnu lo nechoshim v'akrabim. If a person came across snakes and scorpions, so Rashi explains we're talking about on weekdays now, Hargan, if he killed them, then he should know Minashamayim that Hashem put him in this position in order to be able to kill them and remove something dangerous from the world. Loy Hargan, if he didn't kill them, you should know that they were there in order to kill him himself. Vinasal and Ness Minashamayim, and you should know that a Ness happened to him from Shemayim, and that's why they didn't end up harming him. But he wasn't given the schus to actually kill them. So according to Rashi, we're talking about on weekdays. The Rif, on the other hand, has a gusa that we're talking about on Shabbos. The Rif and the Rosh have a gusa we're talking about on Shabbos. So the same thing. If the person is in a situation where he's allowed to kill them on Shabbos, then he does, then you should know. Hashem put me in that position in order to be able to, Hashem wanted to give me the schus of removing something dangerous from the world. But otherwise, it just means that you should know that Hashem, if let's say, as we said, they're not chasing after him, so then he doesn't necessarily have a heter to kill them, so then, okay, you should realize that Hashem is giving him like a warning, that Hashem made a nest for him. Well, this is also true, but this is why Rashi says that we're not talking around Shabbos. But the Rif and the Rosh have a girsa that we're talking around on Shabbos. Okay. That means specifically when they're hissing at him. Oh, so that's, we're not talking about where Stam they're in the room. We're talking about they're hissing and making a noise like they're about to attack him. So then we're saying that if he kills them, then it shows he had a schus min Hashemayim. And if not, it also means Hashem was giving him a warning and showing that he's making a nest for him. Again, if it's on Shabbos, same thing. Because if on Shabbos, if they're hissing, it shows they're about to attack. So then you have a heter to kill them on Shabbos. One time, a certain one of these creatures, a snake or whatever, fell in the Beis Medrash. In other words, it was there, and it's a dangerous creature there in the Beis Medrash. A person from Noyos came and killed it. Noyos is the name you have in Sefer Shmuel. It tells about how at one point when David was running away from Shaul, at one point he comes to Shmuel in Noyos in Ramah. So, Pashas, Noyos is the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael, or a town, or a neighborhood in Ramah, in Shoals, in Shmuel's city of Ramah, in Eretz Yisrael. So, Pashas, this Yid was from there. Anyway, so this person got up Bahorgai and killed the creature. Omar Rebbe, Poga Boy, Kayotze Boy. So, Rebbe says the creature was killed by something like it. So what does that mean? So does he mean the shaper of Adaloi? What does Rebbe mean by that? Does he mean he did good? He means that the snake was threatening us, and therefore this guy did the same thing. He threatened, and the snake was about to kill us, so this guy did the right thing and killed the snake. Or does he mean not? Does he mean that the look at this, a snake, a dangerous creature was here, and now a person who's like a snake went and killed it? So what does he mean? Does he mean that he should have done it, or he means he shouldn't have done it? By the way, the Alter Rebbe brings this expression in Perek Lamed Aleph of Tanya, where we have an expression that sometimes you have to have. Sometimes you have the famous other expression, "Minero be Abel is Leizel be Narga." That so you have to chop down a tree, use an axe whose handle itself comes from the same forest. So the same, and the same thing with Poga by Kayotzeboy. Sometimes you need, for example, you have the snake of the Yetzirah is attacking a person, and you need to beat him at his own game. The Alter Rebbe talks about, for example, by you use Asfus or Merirus against it. He's trying to get you into Asfus. He's trying to get you into a depression to not serve Hashem. So instead, you use Merirus, which is a kind of Asfus, in order to beat the Yetzer Hara. There's sometimes you have to be Besimcha, but sometimes also the Alter Rebbe talks about it's appropriate to use Merirus, which is a kind of Asfus, in order to beat the Yetzer Hara. So, you know, you don't do Asfus, which is a deadening kind of depression, but rather Merirus, which is a constructive kind, like I'm bitter over the fact that I'm far from Hashem because of my Avedus, and therefore I'm going to use that. But then the Alter Rebbe mentions in that connection this expression, Poga by Kayotze by. Anyway, but in terms of Or Gemara, the question is Rebbe saying, well, that's something else. You gave the instructions. You do the crying into eager to let you have it provide. Because not really the same thing, but okay, now. All right, anyway, so the question is, does Rebbe mean positively that this guy did a good thing? We had a killing creature over here, and he did the right thing by killing it. Or does he mean, no, it wasn't. What doesn't say that it was hissing? Before it was talking about we were hissing. Before it was talking about where a person came across a snake or a scorpion on Shabbos that was hissing at him, and he killed it. This is a new case. So does Rebbe mean positively that he did the right thing by killing it, or does he mean a negative thing? That look at this slimy creature, the snake, and this slimy guy came and killed it. So what is it? Tashma, Dirab Abba Bre, Dirab Chiba Abba, Rab Zera, Habu Yas Yakila, Dirab Rab Yanai, Rab Abba, the son of Rab Chiba Abba, and Rab Zera one time was sitting by the front porch of, or by the entrance of the house of the yeshiva of Rab Yanai, Nafak Milsim Minayu. As they were sitting over there, something came out from between them. In other words, people overheard that they're talking, but they didn't know which one of them said it. Bo me name Rabbi Yanai, that they had asked Rabbi Yanai a question. Mahu larig nechoshen ba'akrabim b'Shabbos. Are you allowed to kill snakes or scorpions on Shabbos? Amalahu, and Rabbi Yanai answers them. Fira ani horig. If I kill on Shabbos even wasps, even though it's not as dangerous as a snake or a scorpion, nechoshen ba'akrabim nechosh ba'akrav loy koshkin. So how much more so a nechosh and akrav? Now Rabbi Yanai was a Talmud of Rebbe. So therefore, we would assume that what Rabbi Yanai holds is what Rebbe holds. So therefore, apparently Rabbi Yanai holds you're allowed to kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, and therefore Rebbe would hold that as well, which means that this Nayusi did the right thing by killing it. Oh, that was Rabbi. Okay, so you're talking about the case of the Aroid in Brachas. So we had a story over there with Rabbi Hanina Mendoza where there was an Aroid. I don't know that necessarily the Aroid has legs, it's some kind of dangerous snake. I think the Mephoshim say over there that it might be like a crossbreed of a toad and a snake or something, which is a particularly dangerous creature. Whatever it was killing people in a certain area, and they came and told Rabbi Hanina Mendoza, and Rabbi Hanina Mendoza put his foot on the snake's hole, and the snake came out and bit him, and the snake died. Instead of Rav Chanina, so it bit his foot. So we when we learned that Gemara, we mentioned over there, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, or I think Rashi brings from the Yerushalmi, whatever. That the way it works with such a snake is, if it bites a person, which one gets to water first? If the person gets to water first, then the person will be saved and the snake will die. And if the snake gets to the water first, then the other way around. In this case, there was no water nearby, but Hashem made a nest and a spring burst out from the ground so that Rav Chanina Mendoza was able to get to water first, and therefore his life was saved. And then, the Gemara continues. He took the dead snake and put it over his shoulder and brought it to this Medrash and said to them, look at this. You see, it's not the snake that kills, it's the Avera that kills. And Rav Chanina Mendoza being a tzaddik, and therefore he wasn't affected by it. Yeah. He got bit, but okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But here we're talking about regular people. So regular people are in danger of an aroid or other such creatures. So yeah. Okay. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, again, if Rabbi Yanai is saying you're allowed to kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, the Pashtus Rebbe holds the same thing, and in that case, that would show that when Rebbe was said, Pogaboy Kayotzeba, he meant it positively. However, the Gemara says, not necessarily Dumala Fitumai, because maybe what it means is that as you're walking, if you're walking and you have a snake or a scorpion in front of you, you're allowed to step on it as you go. And it's not a problem, because it's Dabar She'en Miskaven, and it's Dabar She'en Miskaven, even according to the Yehuda, Tosfos also mentions it in a few other places in the Masechta, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says Dabar She'en Miskaven Osir, would agree it's only Osir Drabbanan. So therefore, in this case, where it's a dangerous creature, so even if it's not chasing after you, still you're allowed to kill it because you're not intending to, you're just intending to step on it, and it's not sikresha that you stepping on it is necessarily going to kill it. That's according to Rashi. Many other Rishonim learn that actually what it means, Lafi Tumay, means you're allowed to actually be deliberately stepping on it, but you have to make it look like you're not. You have to make it look like you're accidentally stepping on it, because even if we say you're allowed to kill it, you still have to make as much of a shinui as possible. Anyway, so maybe that's what Rabbi Yanai means. Maybe it doesn't mean you're actually allowed to go and kill it directly, but you're allowed to kill it by stepping on it, which may or may not kill it, and you may or may not have intended to even step on it. Maybe. Okay. All right. So another case, the Gemara says, the Omer of Yehuda, Roik Dosa Lefitumai, as in fact we find Rabbi Yehuda says, if you have spit on the ground, so you're not allowed to deliberately wipe it, you're not allowed to deliberately rub it out, because then you're going to smooth out holes in the ground. But Dosa Lefitumai, you're allowed to step on it as you're walking. In other words, again, even though you're smoothing out the ground, but you're not having Kavana to do it, or you're not having kavana to do it, or even you are having kavana to do it, but you're making it look like not, and it's basically allowed because otherwise it looks neistic, it looks disgusting, you have it on the floor, so therefore such a thing is allowed. But Amar Rav Sheshes Nachash Dos Lefitomai, but Amar Rav Ketina Akrav Dos Lefitomai. So if you're stepping on them Lefitomai, maybe that's what we're talking about. Maybe you're not allowed to kill it directly, but Rav Yana is saying if you step on it accidentally on purpose or whatever, then you're allowed to. Okay. So we don't really have a proof one way or the other what Rebbe meant about what this Noyusi did. Okay. The Gemara tells a story in this connection. Abba Bar Mauta, Dehu Abba Bar Manyumi. He had two names, and maybe one possibility is Manyumi might have been his father and Mauta was his mother, and he was known as the son of both of them. Maybe both of them were famous, whatever. Anyway. Have a Maskebe Devei Resh Galusa Zuzi. He owed the family of the Resh Galusa money. And he wasn't paying. Maybe because he couldn't afford it. Asyu who come at Sarali. So they brought him to the house of the Resh Galusa, and they were bothering him and harassing him to pay up. Have a shoddy yuka. Then he noticed there was spit on the ground over there. It was on a Shabbos. Amalahu Resh Galusa Aisumana Schifu Alabay. The Resh Galusa says to his servants, "Go get a keli and put it over it. I don't want to see the spit on the ground on Shabbos." Amalahu loitz richitu. So Abba Bar Mauta, Abba Bar Manyumi tells them you don't need to do that. Hachi, Amar Rav Yehuda roik dorsa lefitumai, because Rav Yehuda said that you're just allowed to step on the spit lefitumai. You're walking along and you're allowed to step on it. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about that you actually did not intend to smooth out the spit, but you're allowed to because davashenim is stavin, and that's only an issur d'rabbanan, and where it's miyustik, you're allowed to. According to the other Rishonim, even you meant to, but you're doing it in a way that it appears like you're doing it accidentally. Amalahu, so the Resh Galusa realizes, Tzurvamen Abbanan, who look at this Abba Bar Mauta is a young Tamad Chacham, Shavkuhu, leave him alone and stop harassing him for the money. Now, how b'chlal are they having him in doing that on Shabbos? Yeah, what are they dunning him for the money on Shabbos? So, what, in fact, Habboina in Ein Yaakov says you find in a number of places in Shas where the servants of the Resh Galusa were not always such good people. So they may well have, even though it's Shabbos, brought him and tried to harass him for it until the Resh Galusa realizes what's going on. The other possibility is maybe it means that they were harassing him at different times, and one of the times when he was there happened to be Shabbos, and he noticed the spit. It could also be, for example, they might have, let's say, put him in jail, and he's still there on Shabbos, and he notices it on Shabbos. Okay. So the actual halacha is that there are heterim to kill dangerous creatures on Shabbos based on what we're saying in the Gemara over here. Certainly, if they're chasing after a person, then you also have, and according to Tosfos, again, only the according to Rav Yehuda, only the five if they're chasing after a person. According to Rav Shimon, any ones that are chasing after a person. With that said, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch that still a Baal Nefesh should be careful not to do that also. And still, you know, okay, so you have a dangerous creature over there. So go to a different room or something. You don't have to kill it. Instead, you can, just remove yourself from the scene, if at all possible. I guess if it's a shul or it's like there's little kids around, then it would be different. Yeah. Okay. Since we mentioned something that Rav Abba Bar Kahana said, so now we're going to mention a couple of other things that he said, which are not we mentioned before that he's the one who mentioned the case of the snake in the Mismedrash where the Noyusi went and killed it. So now we're going to mention a couple of more dinim from him in connection with Shabbos, which are not directly related to our sugya otherwise. So Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana, Amar Rav Chanina, Pamoites Shabbos Yudavi Mutal Taltalim Shabbos. The candlesticks that you have in Rebbe's household, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. So these are talking about, now we learned earlier in the Masechta, there are rules about them. If they're large, you're not allowed to. If they're made out of pieces, you're not allowed to, because then they may fall apart as you're moving them, and then you're going to put them back together on Shabbos. If they were lit at the beginning of Shabbos, then we had a machlokes tanoim, whether you're allowed to move them. So here we're talking about where none of those considerations apply. So Rav Zera asked Rav Abba Bar Kahana, what do you mean? Do you mean the kind that are small enough to carry in one hand, or even the kind that are large enough that you need both hands in order to pick it up and carry it? So he answers him, the kind that you have in your father's household, meaning only the ones that are small. The ones that are large, the person is keveya mokum for them, he designates a place for them before Shabbos, and doesn't intend to move them on Shabbos, and therefore they're mokta. Tosfos learns exactly the opposite, that what we mean is, ka'os and shal beis avicha means even ones that are big or even ones that are small, if they don't, even ones that are small, but they, as long as they're not made out of pieces, they only have like grooves around them, and they look like they're pieces, Tosfos learns you're allowed to move such ones on Shabbos as well. Also, you're allowed to move on Shabbos the wagons or the carriages that belong to the household of Rebbe. They're not mukta. And the point would also be you're allowed to have them, you're allowed to drag them on the ground, and we're not worried about that you're digging up the dirt or whatever. Again, do we mean the kind that are light enough that one person could carry them, or do we mean even the kind that are heavier and you need two people? And again, he answers, the kind that you have in your father's household, which again, according to Rashi, means that they were small, and according to Tosfos, means that they were big. Apparently, I think we have a Gemara someplace that the father of one of the Amoraim, and if I remember correctly, it was Reb Zera, was a tax collector and a very honest tax collector who would only collect what he was supposed to. But so Bapashtus then he was rich. So I think it was Reb Zera's father. I don't remember for sure, but if so, then yeah. Not that I know of, no. No. Not sure who you're asking. Oh, maybe Rabbi Bar. I think that was Rabbi Bar of Huna. Not sure. Maybe. I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah, maybe. All right. Anyway, let's talk about that afterwards. All right. Okay, and the last one, V'omer of Abba Bakahana, Hitu Lahem Reb Chanina, L'beis Rebbe, L'shtes Yayin, V'kronis Shonachri, V'choisim Echad. Reb Chanina gave a heter to the household of Rebbe that they were allowed to drink wine that was brought in Goyesha coaches, in Goyesha wagons, where it was sealed with only one seal. Usually wine has to be sealed with a double seal in order to be... So usually wine is one of those things that you need a choysam b'say choysam, where if a goy is transporting it, you need a choysam b'say choysam to be able to drink it. Here, Reb Chanina is allowing the family of Rebbe to drink it with only one choysam. Now, for lawyer Dinah, says Reb Zera, I don't know, imishum b'savalok Reb Eliezer, or maybe Reb Abba Bakana actually is saying, Reb Abba Bakana is reporting this, but he's saying, I don't know, is that because Reb Chanina held like Reb Eliezer that you always only need one seal? And in that case, that would mean that's not the final halacha, because the final halacha is like a chachamim that wine and a couple of other things, you need a double seal. Or maybe usually Reb Chanina agrees that you need two seals, but in this case, because of the fear of the Nasi, because the Nasi had a lot of political power, so the Goy who brings it might be afraid of the Nasi, that he's afraid. If he tampers with the wine, then they're going to find out and he's going to get punished severely. So maybe even Reb Chanina would agree that with anybody else, you would need a double seal. That's the halacha, is you do need a double seal for wine in order for it not to be Yayin Nesach or Stam Yayin or whatever. Okay.